Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. It is week 12. The Dogs are 11-0, number four in the nation, according to the CFP rankings, and Oregon right behind at number six, 10-1. Mark, you are the duck. My name is Warren. I am the dog. How are you doing, my friend?
Warren, I'm doing great. It's great to be heading into the final game of the regular season, feeling like everything is on the table. Great time to be alive.
Everything is on the table, and more I hear the words of Thanos ringing in my ears. I am inevitable, and it just seems like Oregon versus Washington in the Pac-12 is an inevitable destination. One more time, round three, here we go. Two teams going after it, and man, I cannot wait. This is crazy.
Warren, you are, I see what you're trying to do here. You were trying to bait me. I'm not going to go there. Oregon's got another game. So does Washington against a Cougar team that's coming in red hot. we can't let ourselves get down that road quite yet. We gotta take care of business for one more week against in-state rivals, which can never be discounted.
Well, let's get into it, because your opponent this Saturday was our opponent last Saturday. This is the second time in the last 3 weeks that this has happened, where Washington has eliminated a team from their Pac-12 title hopes, only to then come and play the Ducks a little bit less enthused, a little bit less defeated. But I have no doubt that these Beavers are going to come into the Civil War, the Platypus Cup, whatever you want to call it, with as much fire in their bellies as they can possibly muster. But they were ready for the Dogs this past Saturday. It was a monsoon. It was a Pacific Northwest showdown, and the Dogs once again came out as the Washington Acrobats, as you like to call them, Mark, and found a way to win this game 22-20 with the game on the line as the seconds ticked off. Mark, I know you were watching the game. What was going through your brain as you saw the way that that game unfolded?
Yeah, I've been watching from a different vantage point, because I, along with my fellow Duck fans, I think we're all of the same mind that an undefeated Washington ultimately is in Oregon's best interest for their own playoff positioning, the chance to take revenge against an undefeated Washington. And at the same time, every time Washington is in one of these close games, I find myself pulling for whatever team is trying to finally do them in. And it feels like deja vu, Warren. I mean, once again, here it is. You have a team that has the ball with the destiny in their own hands, down by 2 points. If they go down and kick a game-winning field goal, we're talking about Kalen DeBoer's weird decision to go for two that didn't work out, and how that left, you know, them vulnerable to a game-winning field goal. Like, and Oregon State faces a 4th-and-5, which is a little too far for them to run that quarterback keeper with DJU, or to just give the ball to Damian Martinez. And sure enough, the Washington defense comes through again. By my count, Warren, I think it's what, like 6 games in a row that they've had a stop on 4th down in the final 5 minutes of a game. Like, it's just, that's the kind of season this team is having.
It has been one of the more unforgettable seasons. There's no doubt about it. And it really, it's like the, however you want to look at it, you can kind of create your own narrative. I think for a lot of Husky fans, they look at it and they say, every single one of these games we could have blown open if not for one or two critical errors. In this game, of course, we get the interception. We have the opportunity to go up 29-10 in the third quarter. And we have basically a 3-and-out with 2 penalties, a field goal that ends up, you know, going through, but there's a penalty. We kick it again. We miss the second time around. Oregon State marches down the field methodically for over 10 minutes, scores a touchdown, and all of a sudden what could have been a 19-point lead is now a 5-point lead, and who knows what's going to happen next. It just feels like every single game since the Arizona game, we've had these kind of outcomes where we just can't seem to blow the doors open. But then again, for the non-Husky fan, your narrative is as just as much true. And that is somehow the Dogs seem to just find a way or luck into a way to win the game. But, you know, what's so interesting, Mark, and by the way, guys, if you don't read Mark's moments, highly encourage it. Mark, tell everybody real quick how they can read your blog, Mark's Moments.
It's a Substack account, so it's mschmore.substack.com is the way to find it. And I've been writing about three times a week recently. I usually do some sort of Pac-12 recap on Monday. That's the Washington Acrobats that Warren mentioned is phrase I coined to try to describe the stunts that Washington continues to pull each week. And then I've been doing a series of top 10 lists for Pac-12 history. Just did top 10 defensive backs in Pac-12 history. Next week, I'll be doing top 10 coaches in Pac-12 history. And then on Friday, I do something Oregon-centric, looking back at a different rivalry each week for Pac-12 rivals for Oregon. And so, of course, this weekend, I'll be looking back at the great history of the Civil War, Platypus Cup, whatever you want to call it, Oregon and Oregon State.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And so definitely check out Mark's Moments. They're so good. And Mark's done a great job of chronicling all the things that are happening in the Pac-12 in this final historic year. But, you know, as I was saying, this is a season where we have seen the Huskies win in almost every way imaginable. We've won with special teams. We've won with outstanding defense. We've won with incredible offense. We've won where one half the offense was succeeding and the defense was flailing. And then the very next half, the defense is succeeding and the offense is flailing. And once again, Oregon State kind of falls into that category. The first half, the Huskies score on their opening drive. They're up 22-10 at halftime. And you're thinking, okay, I like the way that this game is unfolding. And then all of a sudden, the Husky offense becomes inept. It can't move. It's three and outs. It seems like all they know to do is either to run the ball into a pile or try to chuck the ball deep to Rome Odunze and hope for a penalty. But yet at the end, when that first down was needed to run the clock out, what did Penix do? He went to numero uno. He sends the ball over to Rome Odunze, gets the first down, and takes care of business, fires the arrow off, as I know all of the adoring Duck fans love to see that that image of Penix firing off his arrow. But, wow, what a game. What a clutch performance. You know, to me, Mark, we could probably get into a heated debate about who deserves to be the Heisman Trophy winner. I still think that ultimately it's going to come down to who wins the Pac-12 championship game and hopefully performs to actually produce the win. I really believe that's going to be the winner of the Heisman Trophy this year. Same thing with the Biletnikoff. And I think, to me, you know, you've got pretty similar statistics among the top candidates, but I can't think of anybody who has had more clutch catches at the absolutely critical moments than Rome Odunze this season. And so it is just a special thing to watch if you're a Husky fan right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was, I mean, certainly if you're wanting to make fun of the Huskies, which I do from time to time, you can point to, yeah, you know, you're doing a bow and arrow after you didn't score in the second half. You picked up one first down. I think they picked up, what, two first downs in the entire second half. So,
brutal.
Like, congratulations, Michael. There is a sense of that, but then there's also a sense of, like, if you just look at the down in the distance and then the throw that he had to complete and the degree of difficulty on that and the handful of quarterbacks maybe that could pull that off in that moment. Like, I mean, it's both impressive and nauseating at the same time. I think that's how I would describe this Washington season, is like, I genuinely am continually impressed. I know you've got a stat coming up about their defense in the fourth quarter. Like, I'm continually impressed by the poise that this team shows when games hit their breaking point, that they time and time again, now going on for a season and a half, offensively, defensively, regardless, they make the key play when it absolutely has to matter. And that's a skill. That obviously is a tribute to the coaching staff. That's a tribute to the senior leadership and all of that, you know. So I can, like, objectively look at that and say, there's something really special about what this team can do. And I've even thought through, who are the historical examples? Is it possible to take this as far as a national championship? Like, you know, so I can look at it through that objective lens. And then I can also look at it through the lens of, like, this team, like, for how much talent they have, for how much talent you boasted about them bringing back guys that didn't go to the NFL, like, this team shouldn't having to be scratching and clawing every single week. And the team that I saw beat Oregon in the middle of October shouldn't have to scratch and claw to win every single week. So that tells me that there's something that is a little bit off, but it's obviously not off enough to cause them to lose a game yet.
Yeah.
And it may not, you know, we may be having the same conversation in January and they're playing for the national title and they just keep finding a way to pull out these games, or they may run into a buzzsaw at some point and get a little bit exposed in some of these areas. And that, I mean, that's the great thing about this debate, is both sides are right until we have proof one way or the other.
That's right. Yeah. And certainly there's a lot of folks out there that think that buzzsaw is colored green and yellow. And we'll find out soon enough. But Mark, I saw this tweet on X the other day, and it was put out by Evan Feather, but apparently it was actually written by Joel Dombro. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right, but I got to read this. It's like a poem, although it doesn't rhyme. But I think it really captures the essence of what we've been talking about. He wrote, "We've won against ranked teams at home. We've won against ranked teams on the road. We've won in the sun. We've won in the driving rain. We've won with the flu. We've won with key injuries. We've won when being held. We've won when losing the turnover margin. We've won with turnovers in the red zone. We've won when dropping a pick six before crossing the end zone. We've won when the ball doesn't bounce our way. We've won with Pac-12 refs. We've won while nearly leading the nation in penalties. Winners win." So good summary there by Joel. And Mark, you mentioned the defense.
It's a great summary. And I think my favorite line is the "we've won with Pac-12 refs," because there is no doubt that the undefeated Huskies have had their fair share of calls in their favor against some of the lesser touted teams on their schedule. So I thought that was great to include that the Pac-12 refs have played a key role of helping the Huskies along the way.
Yeah, it's so interesting how fans see what they want to see, isn't it? You know, I think for every missed call for the Huskies, you know, Husky fans can point to 10 calls that should have been made or were made in error that ended up penalizing them. So, I mean, it's hard to say that the Huskies have gotten a break when they're one of the most penalized teams in the nation. But, you know, yeah, like
is,
I said,
that is a good point.
There certainly are a few pointed examples that I know our friends in Tempe, Arizona might point to, and perhaps in Stanford as well. But Mark, the last five games, this is the point total by opposing offenses in the fourth quarter against my Washington Huskies. Oregon State, 3. Utah, 0. USC, 0. Stanford, 7. ASU, 0. And then, of course, Oregon, 7 points. So really, whatever it is that they're doing in the fourth quarter, they're coming up big. They're coming up clutch when they need it. The question mark that I think most Husky fans are asking is, could they possibly just for one game put it all together? Give me one game of just complete defense, please.
I think that's the question that everybody's asking, whether you're rooting for the Huskies or against the Huskies. Like, I mean, Warren, I pulled a stat just to illustrate this, that's not trying to make a point about this Washington team against any other team. Last year in conference play, the Washington Huskies outgained opponents by an average of 114 yards a game.
Yeah.
This year in conference play, the Washington Huskies are outgaining opponents by an average of 4 yards per game. I didn't misspeak. 4 yards per game of advantage margin. Like, it doesn't take a mathematician, and this is not like it's not like the Huskies have like an overwhelming edge in the turnover margin that they've actually lost the turnover margin collectively for the season. It doesn't take a mathematician to look at that and say a team that is essentially giving up the same number of yards that they're getting every single week, like, shouldn't be undefeated at the end of that season. Like, it kind of boggles the mind. And I think
it does.
I find myself going like, yeah, where is the four quarter masterpiece where they just play kind of their best game? And of course, my fear is that's still lurking, right? That they're going to find that gear in the next couple weeks. And that maybe Oregon is the team that ends up having to kind of to get them when they find themselves. But then there's also a sense of like, if you haven't found it now in week 12, and this is a crew that's basically been together now for 2 years, and it does seem like they were playing at a different level, like in last year's Apple Cup, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder, like, if there's something that we're kind of missing about why some of these results aren't more, more of a resounding win for the Huskies.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I mean, I think there's no doubt that if you look at last year's team versus this year's team, in spite of some bad moments, like an 11 play span against Utah, this defense is significantly better. I mean, Oregon State came into this game with 36 sacks, which was fifth in the nation, 19 sacks in their previous four games. They didn't even touch Penix on Saturday. The offensive line is stopping him. 20 points was the lowest point total that Oregon State had on offense this past Saturday. So, they're making improvements in key areas. Jabbar Muhammad had the game of his life, 3 takeaways, 4 pass breakups, 2 interceptions. So, there's things that you can look at, okay, and say, okay, they're better than they were last year in this way. But, my recollection of most of last year was that guys were wide open all the time last year. And that has not been the case since maybe the Michigan State game, maybe the Cal game, where, we were just kind of just rolling up and down the field. Since then, it's been a lot of hotly contested passes, a lot of, Romo Odunze going up and getting the 50-50 ball 90% of the time. And so there's a part of me, and I know that some of my Husky friends are wondering this as well, and that is like, has you know, the defenses in the Pac-12, have they somehow caught up with this Husky offense? Like, have they figured out something about what Ryan Grubb is doing that is making it so that he's not getting these wide open looks like he was last season and earlier this year? The other question is, how much of that has to do with not having Jalen McMillan? You know, is Jalen McMillan really that big of a factor that having him on the field opens up, you know, the offense in a way that it's almost like night and day from where it was before? I don't know, but I know this, that, you know, if the Huskies are going to be able to come into the Pac-12 championship game, which we are, we have guaranteed our spot. We, you know, we have clinched the playoff. We have clinched, not the playoff, we've clinched the Pac-12 championship game. But if we're going to come into that game with any hope of being able to keep up with a red hot Oregon, we've got to get that offense firing again this Saturday against Washington State. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about whether or not we can do that. So this Apple Cup, you know, it has tremendous ramifications, not only for maintaining the perfect season, but really it needs to be a get right game if you're a Husky fan, you know, looking to see that offense, you know, take strides to get back to where it was earlier in the season.
Yeah. And I think what you said about the question of, you know, have defenses figured out a way, not certainly not to, you know, shut down this Washington offense, but have defenses figured out maybe some ways to limit some of their strengths? I think that's the hope, right? That's the hope that everybody who's having to play the Huskies is kind of carrying, is that, and it certainly seemed like, you know, the Beavers had a pretty sound game plan, although that game was also played in a monsoon. And yeah. I know Millen is still not like fully himself. He certainly doesn't look like 100%. So again, it's one of those things where it's just, we're going to have so much more clarity about this question like 2 weeks from now, I feel like.
Yeah.
And even then, the question still might persist into the playoff if Washington's fortunate enough to make it that far. So it's as fascinating of an undefeated season as I can remember in quite some time. Although I also think back to a team like TCU just last season,
mm-hmm.
which had a lot of similar beats in terms of a team yeah. that continued to make the big plays in the fourth quarter. So it hasn't been lacking for drama, Warren. I've watched more Washington Huskies football this season than I probably have in the last 10 years, just because every single one of their games is so compelling and coming down to the wire.
Well, and as much as that is true for this Washington Husky team, the exact opposite is the case for this Oregon Ducks team. Once again, they absolutely trounce their opponents. They are a steamroller. There's no drama. There's no question as to who's going to win this game. The Ducks roll over Arizona State 49-3, and it was over like within minutes. It seemed like 70-yard pass, 80-yard pass, 70-yard pass, just one after the other. Massive statistics. Give me your thoughts about what you saw from this Oregon team that was going up against former offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham and an Arizona State team that clearly was reeling from losing quarterbacks and you know, just a dreadful season, but a team that no doubt gave the Huskies a run for their money.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, it was 49-13. That was a typo on my part on the show.
Sorry.
I apologize for that. But it was 42-0 at the half. Bo Nix school record, had a school record 6 touchdown passes in the first half. tied the school record, and then actually could have broken the record. He had a seventh touchdown pass that was waved off at the beginning of the second half on a really kind of a phantom offensive pass interference, and then he didn't play after that series. But
crazy.
Yeah, he is playing the best football of his life these past 4 weeks. I mean, has just been unbelievable in terms of his efficiency and the throws that he's making. Two of his touchdowns went to Troy Franklin. Troy Franklin now owns or shares the school records for single season receiving yardage, single season touchdowns. He leads the nation in both of those categories. So quite the mark for him. You've got Bucky Irving, who gets to 1,000 yards for a second consecutive season. That joins a club of Oregon running backs that only includes Ontario Smith, LaMichael James, and Royce Freeman. So that's pretty elite company that Bucky Irving finds himself in. And then, you know, what can you say about the defense? They pitch a shutout in the first half. I saw a stat that only Georgia and Oregon are among the top 10 teams in the nation in scoring offense and scoring defense. And when you consider that they were, I think, 70th in scoring defense last season, that's a pretty significant improvement. So, you know, it's hard to take too much from this game. Like you said, Arizona State is really outmanned. They lost 55-3 2 weeks ago to Utah. They pulled it together and kind of pulled some kind of incredible upset over UCLA. But I think we got the version that lost 55-3 to Utah. Like, this is a team that is just, they've been beaten down. This is not the same team that took the Huskies down to the wire. They don't seem to have that same spark and energy to them. But at the same time, like, you know, how many times have you seen a team outscore another team 42-0 and a half? Like, you know, it's hard not to be impressed by that.
Especially a Pac-12 team. I mean, it's one thing to do it against Sacramento State or Portland State or something like that. But, you know, a Pac-12 team, even if they're a bottom dweller, still has a little bit more pride than that.
Yeah.
Mark, I want to put you on the spot a little bit, because I think maybe it was 5-6 weeks ago. You know, we were talking, I can't remember if it was on the pod or just off the air, but we were talking about how, you know, you kind of were framing this as like, this year is more special for Washington Husky fans than it is for Oregon fans, because the Huskies have this generational player in Michael Penix and a, you know, generational trio and McMillan and Odunze and Polk. But now that Nix and Franklin and Irving have kind of gotten on this epic run, you know, I would love for you just to maybe kind of just give me a cursory overview of where those three guys kind of fall in their respective positions as Oregon legends. I would assume that at the very top of the quarterback mountain for the University of Oregon is Mariota, but where does Nix come in behind that? Like, is he number two? Is he like number five?
Yeah.
You know, based on what he's done in the 21 games that he's played as an Oregon Duck, how would you rank him in, you know, in your maybe top tier of, you know, Oregon quarterbacks?
I'm glad you asked that question. We did not talk about this ahead of time, but this has been something that I have thought about. My ceiling for this Oregon team has gradually increased kind of with each week that has gone by. So when we talked midseason and I suggested that game in October really meant more to the Huskies because of the special team that they had, and that, you know, I really meant that at the time. And now I think I would walk that back, one, because of these last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see some glitches in the Husky machine that I didn't see then. So there's part of me that says, I'm not sure that this is like the window is open for this team in quite the same way. But also I feel like I actually came out of that Washington game feeling better about Oregon's chances in the long term than I did going in a weird way. That doesn't usually happen. And I think the last 6 weeks have just kind of built on that, where it's just kind of realizing that this team is getting better every week. Like when I compare this team to the team that almost lost to Texas Tech back in September, mm-hmm. like it's just night and day in terms of all over the field in terms of what they're able to do. So I'm definitely looking at this stretch run as saying this has a chance to be one of the best Oregon teams of all time. And to cement that legacy, a lot of that is determined by the next 2 weeks, because if they don't win a conference championship, you can't elevate them, you know, into that club with some of the other great Oregon teams. As far as individuals, I think the easiest one is Troy Franklin. He's far and away the best wide receiver in Oregon history. I mean, he's going to he's already got now the major single season records. I think he's tied with four other great Oregon receivers for the career touchdowns record. And he's done that in less than 3 years. And all of those guys are 4-year players. Guys like Jeff Mayle and Josh Huff, Keenan Howery, Kristen McLemore is the other one. So he's going to have all of these records. I don't know that he's going to get the career yardage record, because he's probably gone after this season.
Around
to get that. But he is by far the best receiver Oregon's ever had. I feel comfortable saying that. That's not going to change based on how the next couple weeks play out. Bucky Irving, like I mentioned, he's in this club with three other Oregon running backs, great Oregon running backs, for back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. There's a couple other guys that didn't have back-to-back seasons that I would certainly put in that same stratosphere, Kenyon Barner and Jonathan Stewart being the two that immediately come to mind. But I think Bucky he's in that club. He's not in the LaMichael James, Royce Freeman club. I think those two are different level. You know, LaMichael James won the Doak Walker Award. Royce Freeman is the all-time leading rusher in Pac-12 history. The numbers that they put up were just insane numbers. Yeah. But I think he's on the short list. And as far as like an entertainment factor, he's going to be a guy that I think Duck fans are going to remember really fondly because of just how tough of a runner he is. Doesn't go down on first contact, fights for extra yards, just such a warrior on the field that I think he's kind of earned a place in, you know, the pantheon of Oregon running backs. Bo Nix is the interesting one, right? From a pure, if you want to just talk pure statistics,
yeah,
Bo Nix is having a season right now that is on par with the season that Marcus Mariota had when he won the Heisman Trophy. His completion percentage is 10 points higher than Marcus Mariota's. Marcus Mariota had 42 touchdowns and 4 interceptions and a quarterback rating of 181. Bo Nix, 35 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, a quarterback rating of 191, 10 points higher. Mariota was much more dangerous on the ground. Nix has not been nearly the running threat this year that he was last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that ultimately, like if you're comparing Mariota and Nix straight up, the biggest difference is 1, conference championship, 2, playoff win, an appearance in a national title game, and then 3, the rushing stats. If Nix can add the victories, you know, certainly if he wins the Pac-12 title and takes home a Heisman Trophy, then I do think
1A, 1B.
Yeah, he's remembered in the same conversation with Mariota. And I think just Joey Harrington kind of has an honorary place in that conversation because of the role that he played in helping Oregon to transform into a national brand. His junior year, he led them to the best season they'd ever had. And then his senior year, he led them to an even better season that still hasn't been surpassed when they finished second in the nation. So I think Nix could definitely end his career in the conversation with those three guys. But it's like if they lose to the Beavers and he ends his career of never having even played in a conference championship game, it feels a little different, right? And it feels like, he never got like that signature moment. Or if they beat the Beavers and then they lose to the Huskies for a third time, that feels like that would be kind of tough on the legacy. So a lot for Bo Nix and kind of how he's remembered in Oregon lore will depend on these next 2 weeks.
No, that seems really fair. And I mean, that kind of jives what I think what I would have said if I were in your shoes, that, yeah, like as this season has progressed, you have to start thinking, wow, this is one of the most special teams that we've ever had. I mean, when you look at this, could be one of the top two quarterbacks that we've ever had in the history of the University of Oregon. By far the greatest receiver, a top tier, maybe in the, not the top two or three, but a top tier running back. And then, you know, you throw in an offensive line that's one of the best in the nation, a defense that's, you know, creating a lot of sacks and turnovers and all kinds of positive, you know, statistics. And so at some point you've got to be going, okay, the years like this don't come around every year. So right, we want to see this, milk it for all it's worth. And so to me, all that does is just amp up how big this year is for both of us and for our teams. And what, like I said at the top of this show, seems like a growing inevitability that these two teams are destined to face each other one more time and see what happens.
You know what it feels like is, it feels like, you know, so I pull for Gonzaga in hoops. Gonzaga, like Oregon, has made it to the national title game twice and lost both times, right? But they're kind of always in the mix type of thing. Yeah. This feels like rooting for a Gonzaga team that, you know, is 30-2 on the season, and they're a one seed and they've got a Sweet 16 game coming up. And it's like, I think this is in the conversation with the best Gonzaga teams, but like if they lose in the Sweet 16, we, you know, they just kind of get consigned to irrelevancy, which is totally unfair.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like this game is for Oregon, is they have a Sweet 16 game against the Beavers. If they win that, they have an Elite Eight game against the Huskies, and, you know, and it goes from there.
That's a good way. I like the way you put that. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so many of these questions for both teams, Warren, are just going to be answered one way or another on the field over the next 2 weeks. And it, I think a lot of the conversations that have kind of been floating around in our stratosphere for the last few weeks are just, they're going to have a lot more clarity.
Absolutely. All right. I've got a scenario for you, and tell me, you're not going to like either one of these scenarios, but just tell me which one would be the more bitter pill to swallow.
Okay. These are always the worst. Okay.
All right. So here it is. Okay. All right. The first option is that the Ducks lose this Saturday to Oregon State, but Arizona State pulls off a miracle and beats Arizona, thus allowing Oregon to backdoor into the Pac-12 championship. Oregon then proceeds to beat the Huskies in the Pac-12 championship with two losses. The Huskies with only one loss backdoor into the playoffs. Okay. That's option one. Okay.
Okay.
Not an option that you like very much.
So we didn't knock the Huskies out of the playoff.
Didn't knock us out. We go into the Pac-12 championship game 12-0. It's a close enough game. Things fall the way that they fall, and somehow the Huskies get to come in similar to the TCU team that got into the playoffs last year.
Do you have the exact same result as the TCU team? Do you lose 65-7 to Georgia at the end of this scenario?
You know what? If we made it to the championship game, I would probably be okay with that.
Yeah.
But that's option one. Option two is you beat your in-state rival, Oregon State, for the last time in that series. And then you play the Huskies and you lose, and the Huskies go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But which outcome, it like, Which would you prefer, or which one is more painful to conceive of?
It's a phenomenal question in a terrifying way. I think my initial instinct is to say I would rather take the Pac-12 title, and I would rather take the win over the Huskies, because Husky fans are more insufferable than Oregon State fans. And so I won't have to hear about it from Beaver fans in the same way. My mom grew up in Corvallis. I kind of like the Beavers. I don't like losing to them, but like, it doesn't hurt in quite the same way. I losing to the Huskies three times in 1 year, I would never hear the end of it from you, Warren. Like, I mean, you would bring it up to me on a daily basis.
That had not even crossed my mind, Mark. I don't even know what you're talking about.
But if Oregon was responsible for spoiling Washington's undefeated season, even if you backed your way into the playoff, keep in mind the Pac-12 title game is Friday night, so it's before all of the action that unfolds on Saturday. So it would feel like on Friday night, it would feel like Oregon knocked Washington out of the playoff. And so for at least like 12 hours, I would have the satisfaction of thinking about how miserable you were.
Yeah.
and that would be great. And so, I think to even the score a little bit between the two teams, I think to claim the last Pac-12 title and to be able to say like, well, how many Pac-12 titles has Kalen DeBoer won with his undefeated record in November, blah, 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 you know?
Right.
So I think that's the right answer. 100%.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that. I can see that. Well, let's talk about this matchup in the Platypus Cup, because Oregon State, they gave the Huskies all that they had. And certainly it was a game that it's hard to necessarily draw a lot from because of the weather conditions and just the way that it played out. But this is a difficult Oregon State team. I think Oregon is favored by, is it 13 points going into this game? But what are your feelings about, you know, playing the Beavers, who I would think are going to put everything that they have into making this game a miserable experience for the Ducks?
Yeah. So this may be of interest to you, Warren. I think last year's loss to the Beavers is something that Oregon players are stewing on much more than either of their losses to the Huskies.
Yeah.
Because of the way that it unfolded. For one, they had a berth in the Pac-12 championship game in their grasp, 21-point lead in the fourth quarter. And then they let the Beavers come back, and it was a meltdown on all sides. It was a meltdown on defense, where they let the Beavs run the ball at will. It was a meltdown on offense when they couldn't convert first downs, and then they drove all the way down the field and had a first and goal inside the five and couldn't score. It was a meltdown on special teams when their punter dropped the ball on the 1 yard line. Like, I mean, it was just a total, total disaster on all fronts that they just gave this game away. It's by far the worst quarter of football that Oregon has played in the Dan Lanning era. And I think this has been cited by players in the offseason. It was cited by players in weeks leading up to this week, that it's like the way that they lost that game. And I think especially for the front seven of the defense, of how they gave up yards after yards to that Oregon State running game with no threat of a pass.
Yeah.
I think it was embarrassing. I think it's been motivating. Right now, if you go into the Oregon locker room, the TVs that are mounted in the Oregon locker room are playing the fourth quarter of last year's game on a loop. Players have tried to change the channel and it's locked. Like, they can't even change the channel. And just that fourth quarter is just playing on a loop all week long. So I think there is
all season or just this week?
No, just this week. They came in on Monday.
Okay.
And you know, that game is on and just the fourth quarter and it's going to stay on. And so I think there's very much a sense in which this game, I think, means a little more just because of the humiliating way, frankly, in which they lost last season. So I think Oregon State is a really good balanced team. I think in addition to Oregon, they're the only team that's in the top five in the conference in offense and defense. So they're very balanced. They have a great offensive line. They have a great rushing attack. They've got like a real quarterback now, which makes them more of a threat. Like, so I don't take anything lightly about the Beavers as an opponent.
Yeah.
But I do think Oregon is going to play one of their best games of the season. I just have the sense that like they're going to be up for this game in a significant way, especially coming at home, where I think the last two times Oregon has lost to the Beavers at Autzen was 2007 when they were playing their third string quarterback. That was the year Dennis Dixon tore his ACL and Brady Leaf broke his ankle. So they had Justin Roper making his first career start and they lost in overtime. And then I think you'd have to go back to 1993 to find another example of the Beavers beating the Ducks at Autzen. So I think Oregon's going to be out for blood, and I think they're going to be ready to play, and I think they're going to assert their will.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to think that they wouldn't. The way that they've been playing, they've been, like I said, a juggernaut. They've been a buzzsaw. Teams have not even been close. You know, I think you made a point earlier about the Huskies that, hey, if they haven't figured it out at this point, you know, what's to say that they ever will at this point in the season? And yet at the same time, you know, there's kind of a part of me that's like, okay, the Huskies are due for a game where they put it all together. And I wonder, like, is there a line of thinking that would say that, hey, as great as the Ducks have been playing, maybe they're due for a game where things don't all go according to plan? Could they, you know, potentially have a clunker, or could they, run into a team that doesn't just roll over for them in the first quarter and all of a sudden, you know, things are more difficult than they anticipated? Is that something that you are concerned about at all? Or do you just think, hey, what they've been doing the last 5 weeks, there's no way that they can be stopped at this point?
No, I'm definitely not overconfident. Like, I feel like gut feeling, I think the Ducks play really well and they win the game. I think that's not like a boastful, like, oh, we're going to crush them. I very much have a fear that Oregon State's going to establish the running game and they're going to control the clock and they're going to have these 10 play drives and they're going to ugly the game up. And like, I think coming out of the way that they won last year's game and that they were just the tougher team in the fourth quarter, it's until Oregon proves it on the field, that concern is still going to be in the back of my mind. And the truth is this is going to be if Oregon can beat the Beavers, it will be the best team they have beaten all year, right? The best team they've played was Washington. They didn't win that game. The other best wins that they've had on their schedule, every single one of those teams has been devalued somewhat since they beat them. You know, Utah is no longer considered in the same way. USC has fallen off the rails. Texas Tech's season never really got going because their quarterback got hurt. Colorado was a top 20 team when Oregon played them. And even by the end of that game, nobody considered Colorado a top 20 team anymore.
Yeah.
So for all of like Oregon's kind of best performances, they don't really have a performance like this of beating a team of Oregon State's caliber. So this is a major challenge. They could absolutely lose this game. It could be one of those games, like you mentioned, where things just kind of aren't firing. But I do think playing at home makes me much more confident that that's not going to happen this week. I think if this were at Reser, where the Huskies just experienced what that atmosphere can be like, I would be a lot more kind of concerned about, like, we just had the first quarter from hell and now we're down 14-3 and this is already making me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I know the Beavers are putting everything that they've got into this game. And, you know, if Jonathan Smith finds a way to pull off this upset, you know, they might as well just erect a statue out in front of the building. I mean, the guy already deserves a statue after being a quarterback and bringing this team back into relevance, but that would certainly be the, you know, the crowning achievement to go out with that victory over the Ducks as the, you know, the Pac-12 sun sets on the Oregon State Beavers. So any other thoughts about the Platypus Cup before we turn our attention to the Apple Cup?
Just that it, I mean, this is, I think, going to be on the short list of the best matchups that we've had for this particular rivalry. Like, there's only been a handful of times when both teams came in ranked in the top 25, and to have both of them ranked in the top 15. I really do wish things had unfolded in the Beaver season in such a way that they were still playing for a spot in the conference title game, because I think that added to the stakes even more. There was a game back in 2009 when they were playing for a spot in the Rose Bowl, and I think that's going to always be, you know, the best Civil War in history. But this one's got some real stakes, and I know the whole state of Oregon will be interested in the outcome, and Friday couldn't come here soon enough.
Absolutely. So the game is on Friday at what time?
I want to say it's like a 5:30 kickoff on Fox. So kind of feels like, you know, Friday night you're playing your in-state rival. It's like, it kind of has this like high school, you know, lights feel to it. But 5:30 Friday night on Fox.
All right. The Huskies are playing on Saturday at 1 p.m., the 115th Apple Cup, the final Apple Cup of the Pac-12 era, and yet it has just been announced within the last couple of days that they have extended the Pac-12 the Apple Cup schedule for an additional 5 years. Next year, they'll play at Lumen Field in Seattle, and then they'll begin alternating between Pullman and Husky Stadium for the remaining 4 years of the Big Ten contract. But, you know, this is a game, of course, that Cougar fans would enjoy nothing more than to ruin this Husky season by upsetting them after, you know, all the years of being the little brother, you know, across the state. And, you know, this is a game where if you were to say, hey, like, does this have trap game potential? The answer is absolutely yes. I mean, the Cougars are coming in, you know, Mark, you kind of jokingly said red hot, but let's be honest. They've lost five of their last six games this season. They did win their last game, but against a even more hapless Colorado team. And we could spend a whole episode breaking down the Deion Sanders Colorado season. That might be another book for you to write, Mark. But this is still a dangerous team. You know, Cam Ward is a dynamic player. In fact, Chuck Morrell was asked who is Cam Ward most like, and he said the guy from USC. You know, and so just for him, the closest comparison to Cam Ward is Caleb Williams, and I think that's high praise. And we saw that last year. I mean, Cam Ward was slippery, and it took us three quarters until we could finally kind of pin him down. So there's definitely that propensity. There's always the fear that some injuries will have caught up with us. Rumor is that Dylan Johnson was wearing a boot this week. So if we don't have Dylan Johnson on Saturday, that could dramatically change the complexion of this game. It's pretty much confirmed that Giles Jackson is not going to be playing on Saturday against the Washington State Cougars, trying to preserve his extra year of eligibility. who knows what J-Mac's status is actually going to be. We keep being told that he's ready to go, but he hasn't had a catch since the first half of the Michigan State game. So lots of questions, but I got to think that this Husky team, knowing what is on the line, knowing what is at stake, they are going to come in fully locked in and ready to go for this Washington State Cougars.
You mentioned, you know, they need a get right game. It seems like Vegas is expecting that because Washington's listed as a 16.5 point favorite. Yeah. They haven't won a game by 16 points since September. So
I know. I'm like, okay, Vegas, what do you know? Because you have not been watching these games the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, and that has not been the case in these previous opponents. I mean, Washington State defensively has some real issues. Like, they are 94th in the country in scoring defense. They gave up, what, 44 to Arizona. They gave up a ton of points to California. Oregon, it actually felt like, left some points on the field against them when they played them. But so it does seem like for the Washington offense, certainly the opportunity is there to get right against this defense. I don't think Washington has played a defense this bad probably since they played Cal in late September. Well, I guess USC. So never mind.
Yeah, true.
Apologies to the USC defense. We got to remember you every time we talk about bad defenses.
The Grinch that stole the Trojans' championship hopes. Yeah. So,
But I think you're onto something, though. With, I mean, it all comes down to what kind of a game Cam Ward can have, because, I mean, I've seen him in two different games now against the Ducks look like the best player on the field. You know, I think he threw for 475 yards against Oregon this year. So he can be a phenomenal player. They don't really have much of a running game to support him. I mean, right. I think they're like the worst rushing team in the conference. So that feels like an opportunity for Washington
to last year, their running game was, you know, pretty respectable. And so,
yeah,
not having that running game, I think maybe the reason why things have kind of, along with the defense, things have kind of fallen off the rails. But yeah, I mean, like I said, this could be a get right game. Last year, Michael Penix threw for 485 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown. But with the way that this offense has been playing the last few weeks, we really don't know what to expect. I mean, are we going to get that high flying, you know, firing on all cylinders offense again? Or is it going to be another gutted out type of performance? I don't know. I mean, if I were a non-biased sports betting fan, I might be putting some money down on the Cougs to cover that 16-point, you know, lead. So that if the Huskies win by 16 points, I will be pleasantly surprised, put it that way. Not because I don't think they're not capable of it. They're absolutely capable of it, but they have not proven that they can do it over the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think we'll know pretty quickly, like, what kind of game it's going to feel like. Like, I think by the end of the first quarter, I think you're either going to be going, oh, here we go again, or you're going to be looking, it's going to be 21-3, and you're going to be feeling like this is our team again. Welcome back, guys. Like, I just think it, you're going to know pretty quickly how it's going to play out.
Well, I think, like I said, you know, both teams, if they can keep their head on straight, if they can keep their eyes clear, take care of business, next week podcast is going to be one for the history books for sure. But what a season. Like I said at the top of the show, the Huskies have moved up now ahead of Florida State. They are number 4 in the college football playoff rankings. We know that If the Huskies win and the Ducks win, most likely both of them are going to move up at least one spot because of the outcome of the Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan game, excuse me, the Wolverines and the Buckeyes playing this Saturday. I would think, but maybe I could be wrong, I would think that both of the, one of the losing team will drop below the Ducks, but there's no doubt that the Huskies will slide up if they take care of their business in that. So you're looking at potentially the number three team in the country going up against the number five in the Pac-12 championship. And who knows, with the injury to Jordan Travis at Florida State, you know, I could see them losing on the road to Florida and falling out of this thing altogether, which could, you know, potentially set up a 3-4 matchup going into that Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that everything is still on the table, right, for both teams. So I think Oregon feels like take care of business and it'll all be okay. It's kind of the way that that I think Oregon fans are looking at this. And I know there's probably some convoluted scenario where they could get left out because of certain things happening with other teams, but all of that, you know, none
if
of that
Oregon happens. Wins the next two games, they're not going to get left out. I can say that with almost 100% certainty.
I feel pretty comfortable and assured of that as well. And so, but got to get through the Beavers first, Warren. Can't get talking about Vegas yet here.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Mark, this has been a tremendous season, and it just keeps getting better and better. As we wrap this thing up, any final thoughts before we sign off for this week?
I do like the fact that Oregon is playing on a Friday night and the Pac-12 title game is played on a Friday night.
Extra day.
There could be a little extra day of rest there. Rest and recovery and preparation. So be interesting if they can take advantage of that. But got to get through the Beavs.
All right. Well, I think that the title of this episode is going to have to be Taking Care of Business. So with that, we will sign off. For all my dog fans, go Dogs.
And for all my Duck fans, go Ducks.
All right. Good luck, everybody, in the Apple Cup and the Platypus Cup. We'll catch you guys next time.